We would like to thank Karen and Jacob Levis for sponsoring this morning's locks. I'm going to introduce by six blood parents, Leah Barab and Leah Batsavram, and Karen's brother Yeshua Ben Shimon Dov. The Neshama should have an Aliyah, as well as to Shane and Rabbi Lawrence Shwed for sponsoring in memory of Rabbi Shwed's beloved mother, Bracha Bas Shimon, Bertha Shwed, on the occasion of her yurtzeit. The Neshama should have an Aliyah. Okay, we are doing the second to last Mishnah in the fifth chapter. It's the 22nd Mishnah, the fifth chapter of Pirkei Avos. We are almost done. There is one more left till the end of the fifth chapter. As I've mentioned in the past, we will do the sixth chapter, but just so that you're aware, the sixth chapter is actually an add-on. So technically, we will be done with the actual Mishnah of Pirkei Avos perhaps by next week. I guess let's see how far we can get today. This Mishnah is pretty fascinating on all levels. Each section of it can be broken down and analyzed in many different directions. We will have to cut out some interesting things just for the sake of time, unless we decide to elaborate and go on it for the future. But for now, what we're going to do is we're going to read the Mishnah. We're going to give the basic explanation of the entire Mishnah first. So we'll cover just so that we get the big picture, and then we're going to go back and take one phrase at a time and see some interesting ramifications that come out of these statements. It will deal with what sort of things are incorporated within the Torah, how all-encompassing is Torah, does it include other disciplines and subjects as well, what are the places of other disciplines and subjects within Torah, how Torah influences character development, and other interesting discussions. So let's jump right in. The Mishnah says, famous Mishnah for those who know Yaakov Shweki songs, Ben Bag Bag Omer Hafochba Vahafochba Dekulo Ba. Okay, it's written in Aramaic. Hafochba Vahafochba. Hafoch means to turn it over. So turn it over, because everything is in it. Now, to be clear, the Mishnah is not clear. What are we talking about? Right? It doesn't say what the it is that you are turning over. We are going, I guess it's not a big spoiler, we are going to assume it means the Torah, learning of Torah. So turn over Torah, but just emphasizing in the beginning that that's not explicit. Dekulo ba, everything is in it. And the question that we're going to have to address is, what is everything? Right? Are the sports scores from last night in the Torah? Right? What is everything in the Torah? Now, Mishnah continues, Uva techaze, v'siv uvleva, umina lo tazua, she'en lecha mida tova hemeno. So one at a time here, Uva techaze, and look into it. So techaze means to look into. So you should look into it. V'siv uvleva, translated here, become gray and old therein. Meaning this should be a lifelong pursuit, something you're doing over the course of your life. Umina lo tazua, don't move away from it. She'en lecha mida tova hamena, because there's nothing better than it. There's no mida here translated as portion that is better than it. So let's assume all of this is referring to Torah. What have we learned? We have learned that there's a lot in it. Everything is in it. And because everything is in it, we should hafochba vahafochba, continually turn it over and turn it over. We'll have to see what the function of that is. What do we get by turning it over and over? And it's something that we should look into, as well as never stop looking into, so do it through our entire lives. Don't move away from it, because it is the best thing possible. So now, let us jump into the first half of this year. It's probably going to be the quicker part, which is going to just be get a basic overview of what we're talking about, and then we'll dive into each section here. So the Rambam first here in the first source says, here you have it in the English, and the Hebrew, Amru al Torah shehafochba, so Rambam explicitly tells us that we're talking about Torah here. Torah, you should hafochba, v'yahagebo, you should learn it, mipnei shehakolba, because everything is in it. He doesn't elaborate on that. V'amar uvatechaze, what does it mean to look into it? Rotzelomar ha'emes, right? Within it, you'll be able to see truth. Perish v'tira emes be'ena seichel, ketargam v'yar v'chazes, you'll be able to see the truth through the eye of the intellect. So through understanding, through using our brains to analyze, we'll be able to see what the truth is. V'achar kach amar v'siv uvleva, then it says to get old in it, klamar his asik ba'ad es hazikna, gam az lo sasur men lezulasa, never give up. Never stop learning Torah, no matter how old you are. That's one of the things that I'm actually, I was asked by the Jewish Press to write a book review for Rabbi Dr. Abraham J. Twersky, Zatzal, who passed away recently, but he has a brand new book that just came out. I believe it's his 90th book that he wrote recently. So I'm reading through it, and eventually you'll be able to see the book review if you want to. But it's interesting that I plan on using some of both of these Mishnayos that we did last week, as well as the Mishnah that we're doing this week, because I believe that there are important lessons to be learned about just the fact that he was writing a book at around the age of 90, and it is his 90th book. Last week we spoke about what the different ages are in the developmental scheme and what they mean. If you remember, 90 was Lashuach or Lasuach, which meant either to bend over, or alternatively, as Rabbeinu Yonah told us, it meant to speak, either speak through tefillah, speak through Torah. And it's pretty fascinating and amazing that somebody was able to do that even at an old age. In the book, to give you a little bit of a teaser, in the book you find a lot of classic Rabbi Twersky themes, but one thing that you don't find too much in other books, I believe, I haven't read all 90 of his, but I've read a bunch, is that he reflects on the challenges of old age. And in the end of his life, the last few years, he had a sickness, he had an illness that made it very difficult, and he was a lot of pain, and that comes through in the book. He discusses it explicitly, and I think that this Mishnah here encapsulates that even when we are older, and even if we're in pain, it's still not, we don't give up, we don't stop, we keep moving, we keep going, we keep learning, is an idea that we emphasize at the end of last week's shiur, but here you have it in the Rambam, comes up again. Rashi here in the second source says, Hafochba vafochba silsala v'trumamecha shebechol sha'a timseba chidushim v'tanim. So why should we review it over and over again? Rambam did not explicitly tell us that. So Rashi tells us, why should we review it over and over and over again? So maybe you can say it's not really a question. Torah is supposed to be learned at all points in time. But Rashi says there's something that you get by reviewing and turning it over and turning it over, and that is that you can learn new things. That each time you look it over, you're able to find deeper secrets. One of the things that Rabbi David Foreman, who Dave Dubrow has been reading his book on Exodus recently, so David can tell you that one of Rabbi Foreman's main theses that comes up over and over and over again, Hafokba Vafokba in his Shirim, is that we tend to look at, I think he calls it the lullaby effect. We learn something when we're 5 or 6 years old, and then we think that that's what it means for the rest of our lives because we never look at it with fresh eyes. We just keep blahing over it and just like running through it and not paying attention. So one of his arguments, and this is one of the reasons why he's such a fascinating thinker and explicator of various Torah concepts, is he's hafochba vafochba. He turns it over and he looks at it from a brand new light, and he helps us look at it from a brand new light. So that's what this hafochba is trying to tell us, is that don't keep looking at things in the same way. By reviewing it and over and over and over again, you can find new explanations and new chidushim. If it seems like it's getting old and boring, it's because we're not looking at it from the right perspective or from additional perspective. So that's hafochba according to Rashi, with a little bit of an elaboration. And then he continues here, dekula ba, everything is in it, shekol ma shetirtze timsa ba. Okay, so this is an interesting statement. Everything you want, you can find in Torah. So presumably what he meant was that all your life's desires and secrets and meaning, probably a better explanation here, everything that you're really looking for in life comes through within Torah. I will add here that I think that, and this might get a little bit controversial, but planting seeds for the future of this year, is that you could read this, I don't think this is what he meant, but whatever you want, you can find in Torah. Meaning that people can look in the Torah to find explanations that prove their own agendas. Right, the Torah is, is going to prove to you that you should vote for X or vote for Y because, and it could be that there's a almost a cynicism here. At least I'm reading it this way, and I don't think it's what Rashi meant, but that You also have to be careful that once you say that everything is in Torah, then you can abuse and misuse Torah to prove a point that you want to prove. Right? So that's if you reread it again. Shekol ma shetirtze, anything you want, timseba, you can find in it. So that's a beautiful statement, and it's also a scary statement. So you have to be careful about how you read Torah. There's a lot there, but perhaps not reading too much into it, because then you can use it for what maybe was not the original intention, and maybe a distortion of what actual Torah values are. And many things have been quoted in the name of Torah values that may not be a Torah value, may just be a neutral value, or may at some point could be an anti-Torah value. And that's why there's lots of disagreements as to what Torah values are. So I think there's a word of caution that's at least alluded to within these words of Rashi. Continues here, Nusach Acher, Hafoch ba shetehe mahafich bakol. Got a little cut off here. States sadeit sadim cholin yanim. You got to look at different perspectives. You got to look. It's not just look at it fresh, but look at things from all angles, from all sides, all concepts. Right? It's not just one. Sometimes we get pigeonholed and sort of focused on one idea, one approach, one thought. There's a lot of approaches. You got to look at it from a lot of different perspectives and from a broad prism. Ubatechaze tadir tadir, or you should constantly, continuously look within it. Uminalo tazua, don't leave it. Lo yom velo laila, day and night we should be learning. Tazua kamo velo kam velo za. So he quotes a precedent here of the language here. It means not to move. Tazua means not to move. Or lo tazua means not to move. Okay, so there's a pretty interesting explanations here just on the pshat from Rashi's perspective. Two more brief ideas here about hafochba. What does it mean to continuously overturn it? What's the emphasis there? So Tosus Yom Tov says the reason why it's repeated, hafochba vafochba, right? Well, you could just say hafochba, turn it over. So there's some, you can just say it's literary flourish, which on some extent it is, right? Turn it over, and turn it over, and turn it over, right? To get a little bit of a feel within the language that we're telling you to turn it over. So Tosfos Yom Tov here alludes to that kafa lashon lechazek ulahoros. It's something to emphasize, to prove, to strengthen the point, al hatmidos vahaflaga, or it's an exaggeration, something we should do consistently. Vinyan ahifuch atzma hu chazara salima. So he understands that hifuch here means to review. And that's embedded in some extent in the other interpretations that we saw in terms of looking at it from different perspectives, as well as looking at it from a new, fresh perspective. But it's important to emphasize as well that there is something to just reviewing, right? Forget about new perspectives. You learned one thing, make sure you review it. Hafokhba, right? You learned something in class today. Hafokhba, review it. Even absent a new, brand new, fresh interpretation, it's important to review. So that's another interpretation that's important for us to focus on. So we have review, different perspectives, etc. Ima's phone raised her hand. Does Ima want to talk? This is not my Ima. This is somebody else's Ima. It might have been a mistake, though. Okay, if you want to say,
Barbara.
Hi, Barbara. I know I was playing with you, but yeah. What would you like to share with us?
It just, first of all, I'm glad to be back. So it just reminded me of the Nahafochul in the Megillah.
Okay, interesting perspective. I like it. I guess you know, we can go somewhere with it. Think it through. What do we want to gain from that? So the Nahafochul, usually we look at it as that it's a flip from one direction to another,
right.
Almost like a
right.
I think you could go somewhere with this. It's not usually how we interpret it as review, but it could be that by reviewing you can get an opposite perspective. Maybe you can hear other views, vantage points. I'd be interested to see if anybody else makes that connection. And not that they have to, but maybe there's I think it's a good connection to make.
Well, yeah. Based on what you just said,
yeah,
it seems like that's the premise, that looking at something from a different point of view, the nahafochu,
right.
You know, turn it around, So it just reminded me of that. It sounds very similar to what you just said. I think that Rashi just said.
Yeah. No, I think you're right. Like, look at it from different angles. Right. For sure. It gives it a new, fresh perspective. Okay, great. We'll remember that. Remember that on Purim.
Okay.
Nice point. Okay, so let's see the next source here, the Beis HaBechira of the Me'iri. So the Me'iri says, Ben Bagbag Omer HaFoch, Hizhiru Shlo Yaspik Lo B'Torah Kriya HaGasa Levad. I like how he presents this. When you're learning Torah, don't just look at it sort of like this big, broad, almost coarse, elementary perspective. Elishie Hofech U'mahafech Ba. Look at it from different perspectives. Flip it over. Turn it over. Kilomar kama pa'amim, several times. Shem yasekein hu motza'a bo ko ma shemefach bek believe. You'll be able to find all the questions, right? Sometimes we read something over quickly, or you read a controversial statement, a pasuk, ideas that you just, you know, oh, I don't understand that. And then, like, okay, so let me move on to something else. No, look it over. See what, think about it. See what people have to say about it. Vu inyan de kula ba, everything's in it. V'chen yisiru shol yivatech bezichronoso v'idiyoso. And then the second perspective is not just look at it from a deeper perspective, but also just don't rely on your memory. Review it. This is what the Tosfos Yom Tov was saying. Eli yachzer bo tamid v'yaski nima, get old with it. V'yivlo nasho alev lo yaser menu ke'inyan omram chagiga. And never... let it go, as the Gemara, and he quotes a Gemara that alludes to the same point. Point is, don't let it go. Never stop. You're never done. Medrash Shmuel here, and this is the last point before we dive into some deeper discussions. The Medrash Shmuel here has a few bullet point ideas that I think are interesting and worth reflecting on. So he says here, one, is that he connects this, we haven't done this in a while, he connects this to a previous Mishnah. Right, so if you remember, we had a methodological point that we used to focus on a lot more, which was that Mishnayos that are juxtaposed next to each other can often lend themselves to adding interpretation to the, by analyzing why one would be connected to the other. So we saw that, you know, we didn't make it that clear, but in the Rambam we alluded to it in terms of the age of getting old, but the Medrash Shmuel here says it explicitly. He connects it. Be'er divrei ben bagbag l'fish l'mala sider yemei shnei chaye adam. In the previous Mishnah, we listed all the years of somebody's life. Kula misudar b'inyan alimud. And if you remember in the beginning, there was 5 was Mikra, 10 was Mishnah, 15 was Talmud. So it tells us exactly what ages there are for learning. Kamosh Amar ben Chameshanim leMikra, Amar Ata. So now in the next Mishnah it says, Shim Kara Mikra Mishnah Gemara. So you learned everything. 5, 10, 15, by 20, I'm done. I finished the curriculum. So no. Lo Yachshov Ki Kfar Hisig Es HaTorah. Don't think you're done. You've accomplished everything. You figured everything out. Uva Ad Tachlita Ki HaTorah Ein La Ketz V'Tachlit. The Torah is never ending. So right, so this Mishnah comes off of the previous Mishnah and says, Hafoch Ba Ba Foch. Well, you learned everything. Great. Now learn it again, and learn it again, and learn it again. Other commentaries I didn't bring in say, if you want to take this, I think I'm elaborating a little bit on it, they don't say this explicitly, but if you want to jump off of last Mishnah even more, is that you could argue that it's perhaps the developmental stages that differ from not just 5, 10, 15, like we spoke about in terms of cognitive, and then 30 is strength, and 40 is bina, and 50 is etza, right? So all those different stages. Every time you learn Torah in those different stages, as you grow older, you have different perspectives, right? So it's not just that every time you learn it, you get a different perspective. It's every time you learn it at different stages of your life, you have different perspectives and different insights, right? So that might be the hafokhba. At every stage, continue to learn it, look at it from a different perspective, because your experiences and the way you've developed will impact the way you appreciate and look at the text. So that's another emphasis as to why this might come after last week's Mishnah. Another explanation. Inami hafochba va'achar sheba osa pam havanas havanta havana acher choser va'hafechba pa'am acher. So you learn something, you got a new perspective, look at it again, v'tavin ba havana acheres yoser amuka, then you get a deeper perspective. V'chein b'chol pam u'pam shetafochba mireisha dekra l'seifa. When you look at it from the beginning to the end, every time you look at it, you're going to get a new perspective, because there's so many different perspectives embedded in Torah. So it's two components here, right? So it's the review is not just that you yourself are growing, that's true, But don't miss the emphasis of the primary emphasis of the Mishnah, which is that the Torah itself is built this way, right? The Torah is so complex and was designed in order for us, right? Hashem made it that when we look at the Torah, you can look at it from so many different perspectives, and that you can get it deeper, and there's so many layers, and you can learn it in second grade, and then in fifth grade, and then in 12th grade, and then in when we're 20 and 30 and 40, and each time, it's not just that we're getting older, it's that there's it's a classic differentiated instruction, right? There's something there for everybody as long as you know how to pull it out, and therefore, tells us about not just the human development, but of the complexity and brilliance of the Torah. Chaim Weinstein, you're muted.
Much of what we're talking about are things that I learned was kind of trained in the elementary school, where you have to review, you have to review, you have to review, and it makes good sense. My point is, a lot of what we're talking about here is not only applicable to Torah, but it's also applicable to, let's say, excellent literature. Lahavdil, okay, I'm not saying that the truths and the depth and the eternal value of Torah is found in literature, but much of this is, you know, reading the Brothers Karamazov at 15 years old is not the same as reading it when you're 63. That's just the nature of anything that is qualitative. So I just wanted to make the point, because we're reinforcing the idea that this is Torah. I know this is a Torah source, so of course we're talking about that. But I wanted to make the point that it's good practice, bichlal, for anything that is of value in one's life.
Right. Okay, so it's a good point. You're also hitting upon what will be a controversial point, or a, we'll see, we could describe, use a better word as after we see it, in terms of the relationship or the how we view literature and outside sources, right? So you could make the argument, which we will shortly, at least some sources will make, that the Mishnah is saying, don't look at all those things, right? So meaning don't look, everything's in Torah. You don't need to look at the, you know, other literature in order to gain that depth, because it's in Torah. So we'll elaborate on that soon, but just planting the seeds for that. A few more hands. Elaine.
So actually what Chaim said, I was thinking of the same thing. Like when I teach King Lear to the high school kids, they're more focused on the three sisters and how they're pulling apart the inheritance. And as I got older, I saw Lear's point. So that's number one. Number two, it seems very, I don't want to say simplistic, but mavara elav, that you should look at things over and over and over again. And if it's going to be literature, then kind of a hummer, even more so, the Torah. And one last thing. When my granddaughter, Alela Shalom, was very ill, we had nurses here all the time. And these nurses weren't Jewish, but they would be reading the Bible a lot. And they would be reading the good book. They were just reading the book. And I one time asked, and I asked actually several of them, about commentaries, and they looked at me like I was talking a foreign language. And it seems to me that the commentaries that we read, because they're coming at things from different vantage points and different times in history and different ages, add to our understanding that it's almost obligatory to take a look at these other viewpoints to add to our own.
So I mean, great points. I would say that your second point and your third point your third point answers your second point. So meaning you and Chaim, both teachers of literature and the like, of course, you know, it makes sense to look at things from different perspectives. I mean, that's how you're trained, and that's how you're trained to train others. I think the majority of people don't think like that, right? I think that when we look at text and we read something, we read it on a surface level. And you know, when you think about reading Tehillim, right? How many people just read Tehillim in order to read Tehillim, and they don't know what they're saying, and forget about complexity, right? It's just it's a lack of understanding. I'm not critiquing it. It's better than doing something else, but it's not self-evident that you should then delve in and analyze and look at it from different perspectives. So, so I think that's, you know, take the perspective of others here, not, you know, high school educators, or beyond, and then realize that it's not self-evident, and that there is, what we want to emphasize is this is something that everybody should be doing, right? This is not something that only teachers or in school or when we look at a text, we want the complexity. We want the depth. We want us to analyze it from all those perspectives. Okay. Moving to the next piece here. So the same Medrash Shmuel here. It says, Ve'efsher od lomar ha-kafal asher kafal shnei pa'amim ha-fachba ba-fachba. Back to the textual questions to why is it reviewed and overturned. Why is it repeated? Hakavanaki divrei Torah lo yuvnu amitan v'tochiyotan al shebetchila yoer hamaayin ba hakushiot shebeinyan hahu sheyor bekushiosef. So he says that it's not just that you'll get different perspectives by looking it over. You're not going to understand it the first time, right? So the first time you read it, you're going to have questions. And you're not going to be able to answer them unless you keep reviewing and repeating. So it's not just that review so you remember. It's not just review so you get other perspectives. It's review and look it over, because otherwise you're not going to understand it. Ki kol dver hafuchim min ha'emes, because there's so many things that are just contradictory and require thought and intense concentration and the ability to think things through. V'zeu hafachba dekamar b'achar asher ekshata l'shal, after you ask questions, atchenirim dver hafuchim lo taniach ador, don't let it go. Don't leave the questions as questions. Hafoch tzarech ion rachazer v'hafachba hafach min ha'hafach harishon, look at it from the opposite perspective. V'teretz kol advarim ha'mutz, and answer the questions, and then, right, so that it's basically through the hafachba is you're actually getting to the truth. You're getting to the to what's going on, because otherwise you're not going to be able to see it. And then finally he says, and this is actually, these four are excerpted. I deleted a lot of other stuff. He has a lot of commentary on this Mishnah. He says, Ve'efshar sheramaz bekafel ta'al merapa lefi lemisha yikshalo shum kushya chazaka betorah velo yadala shum teretz. Let's say you have a big, strong question. You don't know the answer. Yad tatana leza ish. So the Mishnah is telling us, Yehafo kol asfarim chol amekomas asher hu choshe shemedabra al osanayin. Beautiful idea. If you have a question, look at all the books that might be related to that question and see if you can find somebody who relates to it. Look at all them, one at a time. Eventually you're going to find the answer. So the point here, and this is for those who've done this, it's exhilarating, right? When you start going on a chase of ideas and you see it's quoted here, and then you look at this and you want to get, you know, the Mishnah quotes this pasuk, so then you look at the pasuk, and then you look at all the mafarshim at the pasuk, and then the pasuk, and then the mafarshim over there quotes a gemara. You look at the gemara, and the gemara has all, you know, you look at all the commentaries of the gemara, and then you sort of go on this rabbit hole of beauty where you just keep going and going and going, and eventually you get such a broad perspective that, you know, the idea he's saying is that you'll get the answer that you're looking for. So it's that hafochba is not just to review, but it's to almost like spiral, keep going down, finding other sources that will help get to the point that you want to get to. Yes, so that's some beautiful ideas here in terms of the learning process and the importance of depth and review. What I want to do now is dive into one particular question, which is the problem, I guess, or the assumption here that everything is included in Torah. What does that mean, that everything is included in Torah? So it's one thing to say, you know, review it, everything Torah is in Torah. So if you have a question in Torah, review it so many times, look at different places, and eventually you'll figure it out. Great. But if you're going to expand, which you don't have to, not every commentator does, but if you're going to have an expansive view that hafochba vafochba de kulaba, that everything is in it, means literally everything is in it. Science is in it, medicine is in it, astronomy is in it, physics is in it, everything is in it. So you're just confronted by almost a, if you're going to take it from a rational perspective, just where, like, you know, so, and if where, you know, if you, like, why aren't we from Torah figuring out all of these medical insights, right? Why didn't we, and this might sound facetious, but, you know, look into the Torah and find a cure for coronavirus, right? So what exactly does it mean? Right now, it could be that, getting back to Rashi's point from before, does that look at, you know, anybody could find, or at least the way we read Rashi, anybody could find what we want within Torah. So kol masha tirtza timtzaba, it could be that you'll find people who say, you're not going to find a cure for the coronavirus in Torahs because you can't take vaccines and the Torah doesn't want you to take vaccines. Okay, but let's leave that aside for now. the point is, you could distort whatever you want. So, but what exactly do we mean by the fact that everything is in Torah? So there's no question that this is a deep mystical concept. If you look here in the Ramban, this is an introduction to Torah. B'shem HaKel Gadol V'Nor, the first thing he writes in his introduction, Atchil Lichtov, just read it in the English from Sfaria just for the sake of time. In the name of the great God and the fearful, I will begin to write novel interpretations on the explanation of the Torah, with terror, with fear, with trembling, with sweat, with dread, praying and confessing with a humble heart and a broken spirit, asking forgiveness, seeking pardon and atonement, with bowing to the ground, with kneeling, with prostration, until all the vertebrae of the spine seem to be loosened, and that my soul knoweth right well in clear awareness that the egg of the ant is not as small in comparison to the outermost sphere as my little wisdom and brief knowledge against the hidden matters of the Torah that lie hidden in her house. So first of all, a powerful first bunch of lines in terms of humility, right? But where he then sets that up is, it says, I can barely understand everything, and everything, there's so much hidden within Torah, concealed in her room, for every precious thing and every wonder, every profound mystery and all glorious wisdom are stored up with her, sealed up in her treasure, by a hint, by a word, in writing and in speaking. Just as the prophet who is adorned with royal garments and a crown, the anointed of the God of Jacob, the author of the sweetest song, said, I have seen an end to every purpose. But thy commandment is exceedingly broad, and it is said, thy testimonies are wonderful, therefore doth my soul keep them. And so the Ramban here is alluding to the fact that he believes that everything, all the secrets of the world, are embedded within the Torah. And again, you find this mystical concept in later sources as well, and there's allusions to it in previous sources in addition to this, that everything's there. We might not know how to find it. We might not know how to see it. The Ramban, who was a deep mystical Kabbalist who knew secrets, still didn't know if he knew all the secrets, and he was, you know, humbled by this experience of trying to write this commentary on the Torah. But his assumption here in the introduction is that within the Torah embedded is all the secrets of the world. So, skipping for a second. Right, so I mean, there's look here now in the taking it a little bit away from the mystical side. Look at what could be assumed is a more rational explanation here, but with the same element. The Machzor Vitri here says v'kula ba. What does it mean v'kula ba? Shekol chachmos ha'olam kalula ba. All the wisdoms of the world. So not just deep mystical secrets, but all the wisdoms of the world are incorporated within Torah. K'mosh amru chachamim, dadeh yarvucha b'chol ha'et, ma'a dadazeh kolzman shi'itanek mimamesh bo motzei tam chalev, after v'ei Torah kolzman sh'adam osik ba motzei tam, v'yesh lomo mitochan derech eretz v'chachma. You can learn wisdom, you can learn character, you can learn midos, the ways of the world, through Torah. And so that's the assumption here of the Machzor Vitri. Everything is inside of it. Look here, let's do two more sources to bring out the point, and then we'll try to back up and give some analysis. This is from Rav Yosef Chayun. This is from Rav Yosef Ben Shoshan, where he writes as follows. This is against philosophy. V'kol chachmos ha-filosofim heim tsarosea v'potera tsarosea min ha-chalitza min ha-yubim. Ki ein l'shum Echad mizera kodesh zika el achas mehem. We shouldn't be learning any philosophy. V'chovah kol ish v'ish ha'omdim b'bris Hashem v'daito hanesuna al yad ne'man beso lidchos kol eila chachmos hanochiros grusha v'menu grush lev v'grush bias lo mehem v'lo mehemnam. So what he's doing here is he's saying in a broader picture, he's saying, if you look at our Mishnah says, everything's in Torah, right? You should only stick to Torah. So this is sort of the second layer of that. Not everything, it almost comes on some level hand in hand. If everything's in Torah, in addition to that, all you should be sticking to is Torah. Kula ba and minalo tazua, don't leave Torah. Everything's here. Don't start looking at other things. Don't start reading philosophy. Don't start looking at outside secular wisdoms in order to get any type of concepts, because everything's embedded in Torah and everything else is going to be on some level distorted and not our MS, not our truth, not our tradition. One more source, Sforno. Hafoch b'Torah lahavin lahabit niflos mimena. Sforno says, look in the Torah, don't look at philosophy, don't look at all the other worldly explanations and their chokrim, their scientists, their philosophers. Dekulaba, everything's in it. Uba techaze, tira movtim sichliim al deos amitios be'inyan aloki, uvashras hanefesh v'zulasam. We can learn spiritual things, divine things, things about the nefesh, the soul. Which will help us get to the real understandings of fearing and loving God. This is what the purpose of man is and the purpose of the Torah is. You will be able to get things through Torah, through working hard, you can find all the answers. Ka'amrum tivakshena kakasik kumitmonim tachpasena, az tavin yiras Hashem edas kadoshim timsa. Right? So if you just know how to look and you hafochba, vafochba, you'll be able to find all these things. Right? And the Maharal, I didn't quote to you here, says, same idea, everything's in Torah, but what if we don't understand it? So he says, don't worry if you don't understand it, it's there, so just learn it, and there's some inherent power and ability within just learning the words. Even if you can't understand all the depths, there's something there to it. So how do we put all this together? Obviously, there's more sources to understand here and to analyze. But how do we look at all this? So I would say as follows, and I'm up to hearing contradictory or contrary views here. What's really on the table here? Maybe I oversold it in the beginning. Right. What's possibly in the Torah? Is everything in the Torah? Literally, again, the Yankee score from last night's in the Torah. I can't imagine such a thing. Right, and there might be two layers here. Right, there's one layer of, if you want to make the argument that all the deep secrets are embedded in the mystical level, you know, I can't argue with that because I don't know mystical level. So maybe it is there, you know, and I can't explain it to you, but it's there. Maybe it's there and none of us can understand it. And it's just something that we assume to be true, that all the mystical secrets are there and we just don't understand it. Fine. Okay. I have nothing to, you know, I can't rationally argue with that. And I'm not, that doesn't mean it's wrong. From a non-mystical level though, And forget about Kabbalistic secrets for a second, but just in terms of, right, the wisdoms, which presumably we're arguing you could find by being hafochba vafochba, and there's no need for this philosophy and the outside wisdoms in order to influence that. So I would distinguish between two separate things. And I mean, it's not me distinguishing, but there are precedents for this, and that is to distinguish between what we would call scientific advances and more moral and ethical, as Rabbi Dr. Leo Levy, Yehuda Levy, has a bunch of books that relate to Torah and science. He distinguished between, and the English teachers could close their ears for a second, but between humanities and sciences. Right. When it comes to the humanities, then you could make the argument that there's no need for that on some level, because all of the ethics, the morality, the psychology, maybe we can incorporate psychology in there too, but that's a debate on its own, whether psychology is more on a social science or a hard science. But, you know, everything that you can think about in terms of ethics and the way to live is embedded in Torah. And that you could make the argument, and they do. I mean, that's what medieval philosophers did for their entire lives, right? They went to go and show you that all of these, all the ethics, all the morality can be found in the Torah, and there's no need to look outside for that aspect. Incorporated in that is not science, right? So there is never necessarily, you know, absent, again, mystical explanations here, there was never an argument made that you can find, by learning Torah, you can find, Newton's laws and Einstein's, theory of relativity and the ability to, to decipher viruses and the like, right? That you can't even, again, from a rational perspective, you can't even start to talk about that. Maybe it's embedded in a mystical secret in some letter of the Torah. But from a rational perspective, you can't make that argument. From a rational perspective, you could make the argument that all of the ethics and morality is embedded within the Torah, Mishlei, Perkei Avos, etc., that you don't need to look at any of these outside sources in order to get to it. So I think that argument can be made pretty clearly from many of the sources here, that there's no need to look outside in order to gain. Now, if you remember, this isn't the first time we've had a discussion like this. We've had a discussion similar to this when it relates to the mission that says, Da mashatashav l'apikoros, know what to answer in apikoros, which is in the second mission in Perkei, second chapter in Perkei Avos. When we spoke about that, we had a similar discussion, what the value of secular wisdom is within a Torah framework, and the general argument was made that from a class, from a pure perspective, there's no need to look outside of Torah for these other realms, for these ethics, the philosophy, etc. But in order to be able to converse and discuss things within a broader model, we'll call it modern, but back then it wasn't, it was their modern, but within a broader sphere, you need to be able to have discussions. So, okay, you can look into some other books that might not be classic Torah in order to be able to speak the language and understand what's going on. And that was sort of an opening to be able to learn outside stuff, which I don't think the Mishnah here is talking about. The Mishnah here is talking about from a pedagogical perspective, from a starting point, is that when it comes to how to live, everything's embedded in Torah. And I don't think that itself is a controversial statement. You can make an argument that maybe we should supplement it in order to speak the language of other people, in order to be able to converse with students, in order to be able to converse in the modern world. Fine, but on a broad level, the argument that everything we need in order to live a spiritual, ethical, moral life is embedded in Torah can be made that argument that that's what this Mishnah is telling us. Two more points. Number one, there's a famous story, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. So Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zatzal, was a very fascinating thinker, who had a PhD in English literature from Harvard and became the Rosh Hashiva at Gush Har Etzion in Israel. And there's a story, I heard this story from Rabbi Aaron Rakefet, who told this story where he said that there was, I don't remember all the details, but it was something along the lines of there was a funeral procession, and there was a lot of back-to-back funerals that were happening, and it was happening that the Chevra Kadisha wanted to move these funerals along quickly. And in the middle of eulogies, and in the middle of somebody, basically families mourning, bodies of their loved ones, that the Chevra Kadisha would push, you know, sort of move they're trying to like sort of get things going. They're sort of like, we gotta move. And it was sort of this contrast between the emotions and the empathy and the, you know, that was going on in on one stage and this other stage of people trying to not, they're not empathizing, sort of moving things along. So there was a student who Rav Aharon was making the argument that the importance of studying English literature, which again, according to the explanation that I just gave for this Mishnah, would not be necessary, right? Everything's in the Torah. What do you need English literature for? So Rav Aharon has a PhD of English literature. So one of his students, a little chutzpahdik, you know, on some level, I think it's a good question to ask. You want to challenge your teachers and ask, you know, what value we have to this Mishnah, right? We have Torah. What do you need English literature for? So he said that. So he goes to the student, were you there when all this was happening with the because it was somebody in the yeshiva who was mourning. So were you there when all that happened? He said, yeah, it was terrible. You know how. So Rav Aharon said, do you think that if the Chevra Kadisha read Shakespeare and read all of the agony and the emotion related to death and really analyzed it and what it meant, you know, to mourn somebody, do you think they would have done what they did? And his point was that there could be value in reading and analyzing literature, because Torah, even if it's embedded, might not always, if you learn it, especially in certain ways, bring out the points of how to be empathetic, how to be ethical, how to be moral. It's there, but there's something that can be added and appreciated by looking at how other people analyze and outside sources and literature, etc., can analyze and deal with issues of ethics and morality that can enhance our understanding of human suffering and human life in general. A lot to think about. I'm not going to answer what's right, what's wrong. I'm usually more on the side of open up to outside literature and outside you know, studies and science, and not just from a pure physics perspective, because I think there is value to be had and to be brought in, and on some level that's what I do with psychology, and part of the reason why I bring psychology into the Torah discussion. Why bring psychology? What do I need psychology for? Torah, everything's in Torah. Well, psychology and the field, I believe, has what to add in how it teaches how to be an ethical, moral, good person, how to live a life that Torah can, it can be there. It might be embedded, and that's part of my argument, is that it's there, the ideas are there, but it's not always the sense that you get that how to bring it out. How, right, the tools, the research, the experiments, they're not there. Right? We just have a source. And part of looking outside can actually enhance. There could be a symbiotic relationship in terms of how things are brought out from a Torah perspective, as well as how a more open stance towards outside literature can enhance that perspective as well. What I want to close with, and I'm willing to hear other people's thoughts, I'm sure you have what to say on this, is one more application of this idea. And that is in terms of character development, self-control. How does one fight the Yetzer Hara? And so there's this classic idea based on this Mishnah, or at least it comes out in this Mishnah, it could be it's in other places as well, and it's reflected here in a statement of the Vilna Gaon. His brother wrote here, if you look here, I quoted it here, B'sefer Ma'alos HaTorah Rabbi Avram Achi Hagra writes, Shatorah Mevi'as Ha'adol Midei Midos Tovos. Remember, the end of the Mishnah says, Ki Ein Lecha Mida Tova Hemen. There's no greater, translated before, as portion. But Mida also means character. Right, there's no so one way to read this Mishnah is that there's no better way of getting to character than through Torah. So maybe B'Shem Agra, so the Vilna Gaon says, Perish B'Divrei HaGemara, B'Rosh Kol Marin, he quotes the Gemara here, that basically, a big picture running out of time, says that the best way to fight the Yetzer Hara, the best way to develop ethics and character is through learning Torah. Just by learning Torah, you will become a better person. That was the Vilna Gaon's perspective. One of the Vilna Gaon's students was Rav Chaim of Elazhin. One of Rav Chaim of Elazhin's students was Rav Yosef Zundel of Salant. One of Rav Yosef Zundel of Salant's students was Rav Yisrael Salanter. I guess this is three generations after the Gra, is Rav Yisrael Salanter. Who's Rav Yisrael Salanter? So Rav Yisrael Salanter, for those who have never heard of him, was known as the founder of the Musar movement. Before Rav Yisrael Salanter, people learned Musar. Musar is ethics, the ability to be a good person, character, self-control, fight the Yetzer Hara, be nice to each other, etc. It's not new. Musar, from its source, comes from Mishlei, right? How to be a good person. So people just learn Musar. How do they learn Musar? So they had their different ways. I mean, there's a whole academic discipline on Musar throughout the ages. But what Rav Yisrael Salanter sought to do was he looked at the world and he looked at people. He looked at Jews behaving and he's like, well, we have Musar, but people aren't behaving along the proper ways, right? They're not acting in appropriate ways. Whether that meant in terms of ethics, whether it meant in terms of self-control, in terms of bodily desires, whatever it is, they're not acting the way they're supposed to be acting. So he started, again, what's called the Musar movement. And again, big, large literature, we can give a whole series of shirim just on this. But I want to bring out one point here. One of the things, this is the two bottom quotes here from a sefer by Dr. Emanuel Ekes, who is a biographer of Yisrael Salanter. Here's a copy of his book, Yisrael Salanter and the Musar Movement, Seeking the Torah of Truth. And he goes, it's an academic book, goes and analyzes the Musar Movement and Yisrael Salanter's works. And the first bunch of chapters trace Yisrael Salanter's thinking from previous sources. So he goes, starts a chapter in the Vilna Gaon, has a chapter on Rav Chaim Volozhin, who was a student of the Vilna Gaon, and how both of them looked at Musar. Chapter on Rav Yosef Zundel of Salant, who was Rav Yisrael Salanter's Rebbe, and how he learned from Rav Chaim. And then he basically shows how Rav Yisrael Salanter learned from them, but also his innovations from them, what he thought was different from them. So for our purposes, one important point. So the left-hand column is the Vilna Gaon here. So in his analysis of the Vilna Gaon, Dr. Ekes writes, we may now ask the following questions. What did the Gaon, the same guy over here from the top here, who's quoting that Mida Tova, learn Torah, you'll get good Midos. What did the Gaon understand as a proper balance between Torah and Yira? Does the study of Torah in itself constitute a means of religio-ethical elevation? Are the study of Torah and the cultivation of Yira, fear, broadly speaking, I guess you can say control, character, are they interdependent? And if so, to what extent? So our question is, what does the Vilna Gaon think about? Is Torah itself enough to get this character? Just learning Torah. So in the Gaon's commentaries on the Bible and those sayings attributed to him by his disciples, one finds a decided tendency to give the study of Torah preference both over the performance of mitzvot and over the battle with the evil impulse and the improvement of one's character traits. He expresses superiority of Torah study over the mitzvot by means of analogy. We'll leave that aside for now. But the point for this particular point is that the Vilna Gaon thought that Torah study was the top of the hierarchy. It's basically, you know, the most important thing in order to work on your character development. Right-hand column, Rav Yisrael Salanter, who's saying, we need a new innovation in how to teach Musar. We have to work on things differently because it's not working the way it's working. The system isn't working. So he says, nevertheless, it was inevitable that the thought and activity of Salanter would be interpreted as a demand to give added importance to Yira alongside Torah story. It's not just enough to learn Torah. We need to dedicate specific time for Yira, for this character development. This relative increase in the value of Yira found expression in the demand that one fix times for the study of Musar, in the statement that even those who are exempt from Torah study are obligated to study Musar, in the establishment of a Musar house, and in the founding of a movement centered on the cultivation of religious and ethical values, Yira u Musar. The unavoidable result of that was a certain erosion of the status of Torah study. The relative increase in the status of Yira, as opposed to Torah study, was likewise a function of the difference between Rabbi Israel and his teachers in their understanding of the value of Torah study as a means of ethical perfection. Whereas the Gaon, Rabbi Chaim, and Rav Zundel, the chain of three teachers, afforded that factor a most important role in the battle against the Yetzer. Torah is the most important thing to fight the Yetzer Hara, at least in respect to Lomdin, to those who are learned, whose main occupation was Torah study. In Salanter's thought, one is struck by the tendency to downgrade its value in comparison with the other means of ethical perfection. So in summary, what he's saying is that where we saw Salanter argued was that just the study of Torah itself is not enough to refine character. It's important. It's one of the tools, but it's not the tool. And so therefore, he argued, we need to do other things. We have to create these new innovations in how to teach character that would take away from the classic study of Torah text. So here you have this tension, which I think goes back to the similar tension in our Mishnah. To what extent is just learning Torah going to and find everything you need in it? Everything's there. Just learn Torah. And the counterpoint, starting with Rabbi Lichtenstein, or at least chronologically in our shir, starting with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter here, is that it might not be enough. Not that it's not in Torah and that you can't find it in Torah, but just the learning of Torah will not necessarily get you to the refinement of character that we want, that the Torah itself wants us to have, because there might be other things that we can do that might be learned from outside sources, perhaps, that can get us to supplement and learn from, to bring out what actually is a Torah value, right? That has to be clear, right? At the end, we're getting to Torah values. The question is, to what extent can you learn from outside sources to ingratiate or ingrain within ourselves what these Torah values are? And Rav Lichtenstein thought the answer was that there can be value. Rousseau Salanter also here believes that there can be value. I leave it to you as something to think about, to struggle with. I don't like to give firm, conclusive statements on such things because I think it's hafochba vafochba. You got to keep thinking and analyzing and looking at it from different perspectives and perhaps people from different life experiences and people at different stages in life or people with different educations. Obviously, we'll all have different opinions on this matter, but at the very least, it's something that we should be thinking critically about, because there's a lot riding on this. There's a lot of important values that we can, that are embedded within this Mishnah, that are hinted to, alluded to, but it requires a lot of hafochba vafochba, a lot of reflection, a lot of looking at things from different perspectives, a lot of review, and hopefully by the end we can come to something that helps us live better, more productive lives, get closer to Hashem, learn how to live more ethically, and learn how to learn more Torah, because at the end of the day, this Mishnah is definitely, at the very least, telling us that Torah study is of utmost importance, and nobody can argue with that. Right? Rousseau Salanter doesn't argue with that. Rav Aaron Lichtenstein doesn't argue with that, obviously. Torah study is of utmost importance. How hard of a stance you're then going to take against other things, or how hard of a stance you're going to say everything is within Torah, there might be some flexibility. There might be different interpretations. There might be different ways to look at it. At least something to think about over the course of the week. Okay, I see a bunch of hands up. So let's give precedent to my mother over here. Hello.
Morning, everybody. To me, the Muslim movement and things like that is just a way to bring Torah to the people. I don't think you're going away from Torah. It's like a teacher writing a lesson plan to develop the theme. also, when you were talking before about remembering and studying what you learned, when I was in Brooklyn College taking Spanish phonetics with Professor Guerrero, she always said, everybody's notebook is personal. And she said, you got to go home every day and read what you wrote in your notebook. She said, because it's your book. And I took her advice, and you know what? Studying was a lot easier. I didn't have to go over my notes and say, oh, when did I learn that?
Mm-hmm.
So review is important.
Yeah, for sure. Review is important. And in terms of your first point, I think it's definitely an important point, right? The Rousseau Solander wasn't saying that I think I mentioned this. Maybe I didn't make it as clear as possible because there are a lot of ideas flying around here. Right. The point is that Torah study, the Torah has it. The question is whether or not learning Torah on its own is going to get you there. Right. So your statement even of creating a lesson plan, well, where in the Torah does it say you should create a lesson plan? Right. It doesn't. Right. It's
trying to teach a rabbi. Right.
Right. But you know, this gets to, you know, a part of even the fundamentals of Azrieli where I teach. Right. So here you have a school, Azrieli graduate school of Jewish education. Right. So what are we teaching within our graduate school of Jewish education? Obviously, this Torah text. But you have your Madeline Hunter and your Robert Marzano. And right. You take these outside secular educators and learn from the way they design a lesson plan and the hours and millions of dollars and thousands of hours they spend in analyzing what the best way to teach a particular idea is, and then you use that for Torah, right? For sure. But meaning that itself is a controversial statement if you're going to take a hard view of everything's in Torah. You can't look at outside stuff to get ideas. So the counter-argument that we're making, and Rousseau Solander itself is you know, there are many, many books to analyze him in particular because he's sort of a cryptic figure, and there's a lot of interesting, fascinating ideas. One of the books that he, maybe we'll give a series on this at some point, but one of the books that he uses is called Cheshbon HaNefesh, which is a Musar book from the 19th century, which itself was written by a enlightened Jew, a Maskil, who got many of his ideas from the psychology of the day, and including some of Benjamin Franklin's ideas on values and traits. Is the 13 ideas that he quotes is directly from Benjamin Franklin. So there's this fascinating trajectory. Not all Rousseau Solander doesn't make that explicit within his statements, but he says to learn Cheshbon HaNefesh. Learn Cheshbon HaNefesh. If you do, you'll see that, and there's analysis of this as well, where that's all coming from. So the point is that to the question of yes, it's all Torah. Yes, we want to enhance Torah, but sometimes looking outside of Torah can help us enhance Torah, all for the sake of Torah. That's the point that we're making, which itself is controversial, right? But I think definitely something to reflect on. Okay, lots of still hands going up here. Let's talk to Pola. How you doing, Pola?
Okay, let's see if I can explain myself.
Okay.
Every human being consists of two parts, the body and the soul. I believe that Torah meets the needs of the soul. In order to meet the needs of the body, you must be successful. In our society, you have to study, you have to take tests, you have to apply for jobs in order to meet the needs of the body.
Okay, I think that's...
Thank you.
That's well said and agreed, with the caveat, I guess with the nuance that what some of these commentaries will tell you is that needs of the body are all you can find also in Torah. Now, whether or not, I guess part of the issue is whether or not it's explicit or not, and to what extent, if it's not, you know, how are we supposed to know it? You know, so if I want to take care of my body, the Torah says, again, it's a Torah value, v'chai bahem, you know, to live, to be healthy, you know, so assuming that's a Torah value, how do I know how to be healthy? How do I know, you know, the best exercises to do? How do I know the best diet? And so there's no, you know, psukim about how to exercise, right? So does it make sense for me to go analyze within Torah exactly the best way to do my exercise? Instead, you know, I'm not going to go to a PT, you know, instead I'm going to learn some psukim to figure out how to do it. Again, it almost sounds strange to say it, right? I would argue that what the core idea here is, and this is the way I look at Judaism and the outside world, is that there are Torah values, and we live by those Torah values. There are outside secular values, and a lot of those overlap. And to some extent, and the Torah is not trying to tell you how to exercise. The Torah is saying being healthy is important. So go figure out from, like, the real world. The Torah is the real world, true, but go figure out by the people who study exercise how to exercise best. Go figure out how, you know, from all these things, how you have to be very firmly aware as to what contradicts Torah values, because that's a problem. That's a totally different subject. I guess it's related, obviously, but, you know, once you start opening yourself to these outside things, well, where do you draw the line, right? What sort of literature is outside literature that you cannot read and listen to or watch? Or, I mean, that's not Torah, that's anti-Torah. That's not helping Torah, right? That's not reading some book that's going to help me empathize more. That's going to take me away from Torah values, or perhaps even forbidden from a Torah perspective. That's a danger, and that's something to be aware of. But, you know, it doesn't take away from the fact that there are things in the outside world that are good and healthy and productive and important, and perhaps can be used for our purposes. Okay, let's do, I'm going to have to run off in a minute, but who still feels like they want to say something important? No pressure. No pressure.
Elaine.
All right, so a couple of things. First of all, in answering Paula, the body and the soul, I think, are both embedded in the Torah, because if we look at the Avot, they were all very, very successful and very, very wealthy people. And how did they become that way? And they had to interact. I mean, Abraham and Melchizedek, and if we just look throughout, Moshe and Yitro, they are discussing, they are learning, they are interacting. So again, we're talking about the Musa, how do we interact, and the lessons to be learned from that. Another thing I think is that if we just stay in the loop of the Torah and don't try to understand, we can be a Naval B'shut HaTorah. We can be evil just looking at the, you know, little fine points and saying. So I think that there's really looking beyond, looking at the science, looking at other things, to understand what is in the Torah, the amazing miracles that are there. I don't see that contradiction so much.
Right. So for sure, meaning that there's no contradiction if you say that there's Torah values, how to behave, how to act, how to interact, what ethics are, what business ethics are, right? All that's there, and now go interact in the world. But that's I think a I would say that's what I would come. That's the perspective I would come from, where you might get, you know, an extreme version of the counterpoint to that is no, don't interact with the world, right? Stay secluded, stay isolated. Everything's in Torah. All your medicines in Torah, all your, right? And that's an extreme version, which I don't want us to take away from. You can take away whatever you want, but, you know, that's the counterpoint that we're trying to not make, right? We don't want to go to such an extreme where we say everything's in the Torah, so forget about outside, right? Forget about all that. There are ethics models embedded within the Torah of how we're supposed to interact with that. Now go interact with the world, figure out how to take, you know, do science, do all that. Okay, so I got to run. I hear the footsteps pattering and the door is about to go. But feel free to reach out. You know, we could talk about this a lot more. Everybody have a good week.